Hi everyone, I am in Utah. In fact, I'm in Salt Lake City, and I'm also not very far off going home, which is really nice because I always like going home. However, I have had a totally awesome week. Just before I do that, the reason why there's no intro text and there'll be no outro text is that I took my little laptop, my Yoga 910, with me because it was just smaller and easier, and I was only here for a little while. Forgetting that Adobe Premiere is only installed on my big laptop, on my P50, the sort of workhorse. But anyway, who really cares about that? Because that's just intro stuff. Anywho, where were we? Utah. So, I have been in Salt Lake City doing a lot of talking, which is why my voice is probably sounding a bit funny too. That and the late nights and the beer, but that's another issue. So, I've been here for the Pluralsight Live event, and this was the first conference that Pluralsight has ever put on. We've had author summits in the past. We didn't have one last year, unfortunately. But this year they said, all right, well, let's do this. We'll have an author summit for one day, and then we'll have a 2-day conference. So I got here on Monday, did the author summit thing, and have just done the conference. And the conference was insanely awesome. I didn't realize what a big production this was until very recently, and really didn't fully appreciate it until I got here. And look, I go to a lot of conferences every year, and I'm used to just sort of going, look, I'll do my talk, I'll turn up, I'll put my laptop on the stage, do my thing, it's all good. And this was obviously a bit more formal, where they wanted things like slides in advance, which, if you've been watching, is not the kind of thing that I really like doing for multiple reasons, and present from their machine and all sorts of other things. And what I sort of realized as I got here is that this is all because it was a very, very slickly run, tightly timed event that really didn't leave any gaps at all for possibly things going wrong. So, gee, where do we even start? Let's actually start on Tuesday, because Tuesday they wanted me to do a rehearsal. So I was doing a keynote. And for those of you that don't tend to go to conferences, keynotes generally cover the entire audience, and breakout sessions, which is what most conferences have most of, is when you'll have simultaneous sessions, 2, 3, 8, whatever, and then people pick the one they want to go to. But when you do a keynote, everyone goes. Well, at least no one can go to anything else because there is not anything else on at the same time. So keynotes are really big deals, and you want a keynote to be very sort of insightful, but you also want it to be cross-cutting in terms of being relevant to as many people as possible that are there. So keynotes are an important thing, and they wanted me to do a rehearsal for the keynote. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I do a lot of rehearsals myself at home or in the hotel room, but I don't think I've ever actually done a rehearsal on the stage before. So, I wonder why they want me to do that. And I've turned up to this stage, and I have not seen anything like this in a conference I've been to, either as a speaker or as an attendee. And look, I've posted some photos on the Twitters and so on, but I'll put another one in this blog post that I do with the video as well. But imagine this: you're in the audience, and the entire width of the stage, which is very, very wide, is just screens. Well, it's projected screens. Now, the way it ended up working is on the outer projected screens was my screen, so the screen from my PowerPoint deck. The inner screens were very sort of tall and thin like this, and that was me. So they had the camera on me, and there was a massive me on the stage. And then you go in further, and then they had a Pluralsight logo in the middle. And the really cool thing as well is that these sort of sections were staged at different levels back. And what that meant was that when sort of one level was in front of another level, there was a wall which was parallel or perpendicular to the stage, and there are other projectors on the side projecting into that. You just got to look at the photo because it was insane how cool this thing looks. And what it meant was that they could continuously change the tone of the environment. When I was up there, they made stuff blue, like the walls around me and things were blue. When other people were up there, many not presenting slides, they'd make it red or gray or project a pattern onto it, and the entire mood was changing depending on who was up there. So that was really cool, and I was sort of very glad I did the rehearsal because there are a few glitchy things with my slides once they put them on a Mac. And incidentally, this is the sort of reason why I don't like presenting from other machines, because you never know what's going to happen. Now, fortunately, we got all that sorted out and it ran perfectly when I actually did it. But that was Tuesday. And then, look, Wednesday, the whole thing kicked off. And there were a bunch of announcements and stuff that came out as well. I may actually write something about this later on, because I've got stuff that I want to get off my mind down into writing. But, yeah, just some really interesting talks there. Some of them technical people like Joel Spolsky. Many of you might know Joel Spolsky from Fog Creek and co-founder of Stack Overflow. So he was an awesome speaker to see. Getting into Thursday, yesterday, I did my talk, my keynote. And I'm so happy with the way that talk went. There are about 1,500 people, something like that, in the audience. It was a 20-minute talk. I had rehearsed it many times before, as I do all my talks. I did this one more, mostly because it's only 20 minutes, and you can rehearse a 20-minute talk many, many times over. But I just had, like, all the timing was perfect. I was looking at the, got a little clock down there you can look at, and I finished, I think, within a single-digit number of seconds to the time I was targeting. So it took, like, 20 minutes and 5 seconds or something like that, and I was targeting 20 minutes. So I was very happy about that. The delivery I was really happy with, I didn't get a syllable wrong. Like, normally, every now and then, there'd be, like, one little glitch, and I'd lose my train of thought or say the wrong word or something. Didn't happen at all. It just went perfectly, and I was so happy about that. And the feedback and engagement you get from people when you do a good talk and they like it, it's just so invigorating. So that was really cool. And the other cool thing was that on that same stage was Michelle Obama later on, not with me at the same time. There are some big dudes around who would probably make sure that that didn't happen. A lot of Secret Service guys, interesting enough. But Michelle Obama was interviewed by Aaron, the CEO of Pluralsight, and that was sort of the closing event. And I got to be honest, when I sort of heard the announcement a few weeks ago, I went, wow, that's a really interesting choice. I never sort of picked her as a big sort of tech person, if you like. You know, why would you have Michelle Obama? And it made sense to me once we sort of got into the questioning that Aaron was giving her. And the thing that made sense is that she's very, very big on supporting people learning from all walks of life. So very big on, obviously, girls learning, different races and ethnicities and everything else, but also making technology and education available to the masses. And this tied in very well with some of the announcements that Pluralsight made about trying to make their content more available to more people more of the time. So that sort of link, I guess, became clearer once the questioning from Aaron kicked off. But in terms of Michelle herself, like, I was really interested in, you know, like, how's she going to be? She's obviously someone that many people admire, who's a very sort of interesting personality. But she was awesome. Like, she was just so genuinely interesting. And the whole thing felt very, very candid. From what I've heard, it was that there was very little scripting in terms of what actually ended up in the eventual talk. Very sort of organic. You sort of got this sense of a loving, doting mother first, and then all of these other things afterwards. And they're just sort of really interesting questions and responses that came out. Everything from sort of her experience in the White House, like, what's it actually like moving into the White House? And she was talking about how she was really sort of conscious of making it a good experience for the kids, because it's a strange thing. And then a bunch of stuff around sort of education, tech, a little bit of politics in there towards the end. She chose her words very carefully, but in a way that I think really resonated with people too. I really hope that interview comes up online somewhere. I'm sure that all of the talks, mine included, were recorded. I'm not sure what the delivery channel will be in terms of how it's made available. And in terms of the piece with Michelle, I'm not sure if there'll be any other restrictions on making that available publicly, but I really hope it is, and I'll definitely share it if that's the case. So, look, that was a conference, just an absolute overload of information and meetings and greetings and things. I spent a bit of time this morning, so I'm actually recording this just after midday. This morning I went out and saw Ubiquiti. So, you know, the people who do the networking Wi-Fi things that I like so much. So I went out and met a couple of those guys and then had a look around at what they were doing, and there's some very, very awesome stuff. And I'm sure that we'll be seeing a lot more of Ubiquiti here and just in general tweets and things. And I'm actually going to write something because I think some of you are probably going, like, how much am I incentivized by Ubiquity? And I want to be really, really clear about what I do and don't get from everyone who sponsors or endorses or anything like that. So I've actually got a blog post in draft about what I will, basically how I handle things. So, you know, who are the organizations that I will work with? How do I choose them? What are the ones I won't do? How do I make sure that that's transparent and open? And no matter how well I try and explain this, there'll always be people that give me crap saying I'm shilling this or shilling that or whatever. But at least I want to be clear about how I approach things. So anywho, that was Ubiquity. I'll talk more about them when I get my hands on some new gear soon. And again, I'll explain how I got it. Now, moving on, looking at my notes, this is 1 year worth of updates. So this is actually, the 53rd update, which would make it about 1 year. I think we're 1 day short of 1 year since I started doing these. And I'm really grateful for everyone who's been watching them. I do get a lot of nice feedback. They're not obviously big detailed blog posts, but they seem to augment what I do pretty well. And thank you everyone who is watching and listening to those. Something else that has been happening, I don't know if you've noticed, but Equifax got hacked. Yeah. We shouldn't laugh because it's an absolute mess. And particularly being here in the US as well, talking to people, people are just, they're almost sort of besides themselves because they go, well, look, what do we do? Because normally you would say go and get like credit monitoring or something like that, but it was the credit agency who got the hack and leaked our data. So, like, are we just all completely screwed? And to some degree, yes, we are kind of all completely screwed insofar as all of our data does seem to continuously be leaked. But the thing with Equifax is that there's sort of been this dumpster fire, as many people have called it, of events that just keep making it worse and worse and worse. I mean, the hack was very bad. The exec selling shares was bad. The website to help you search was bad. The cross-site scripting that they had in the website to help you search was bad. And it kept going downhill and downhill. And everyone has just been picking them to pieces in terms of pointing out everything that is wrong, and there is a lot of stuff that's wrong, as well as drawing some pretty long bows. Now, this sort of leads me to the point I wanted to make here. So one of the things that popped up in the press quite a bit, and this would have been just before I left Australia, so probably Friday, Saturday, I think. One of the things that popped up was that the CISO did not have any sort of security degree and, in fact, had a music degree. And the headlines were something like Equifax CISO has music degree and the implications of that being that she was unqualified for that role. Now, I shared the news story, and I said something to qualify why I was sharing. I said something like, I hope there's more to it than that. And what I was trying to say was that I hope there is more to her qualifications and her experience than just having a music degree. Now, as you may know, 140 characters doesn't always translate the full sentiment and meaning of what it is that you're actually writing. And I suddenly had a bunch of people pile on and get very upset that I had implied that she has a music degree, therefore is unqualified. Now, this is not what I meant at all. And in fact, some people were saying, look, you know, you shouldn't be criticizing people just because they don't have a degree in InfoSec or whatever it may be. And I think I'm going to write something else on this because it actually relates to a bunch of things I've seen this week as well around qualifications and experience and skills. But by no means did I mean that. Look, I went to university and did a computer science degree right up until the point where I found it was completely bloody useless and I left it and never finished it. So I'm kind of the last person in the world who's going to jump up and go, this person should have had a degree to do what she was doing. It sounds like she has other InfoSec experience or had other InfoSec experience. The problem is that because Equifax is such a disaster, people are looking for every little thing they can find to try and point to the cause. It doesn't help that it looks like she's gone and deleted her LinkedIn profile because it looks like a raising evidence. Now, none of that sort of excuses the sort of saying that she was unqualified or unfit just on the one basis of a degree in something else, I assume 20 or 30 years ago, whatever it was. But you can see how it just starts to make the whole thing look worse and worse and worse. Anyway, I will come back because I do want to write about education, and I do want to write about where I think sort of formal tertiary qualifications fit in with industry experience and also fit in with things like online learning, the likes of Pluralsight. So that'll be interesting. We'll come back to that. In the meantime, I think everyone's going to just keep picking Equifax to pieces until it's dead or very, very close to it. All right, moving on. So something else. And incidentally, I haven't actually written anything this week because I have been kind of busy. But this is all going back to conversations that have been had over the last week since my last update. You know, obviously, Equifax being one of them. One of the things that came up this week, and I'm going to see if I can actually open up this tweet because I'm looking at my iPad over here. Also, I updated all my things to iOS 11 very, very quickly. Some things work pretty well. Some things are a little bit dodgy. So things like the Twitter integration seems to be doing some really screwy stuff. Like I'll try and tweet from somewhere and it will chop off half the text and do some bizarre things. Here's the thing I want to talk about though. This is the tweet I sent the other day. So this was, where are we now? This would have been actually Saturday. I said, most surprising thing from my Face ID chats is people worried about police access. This is exclusively from US folks. Is it really that bad? And I kind of wanted to put that out there because I spoke last week about Face ID and how I was trying to sort of say, it's different to Touch ID, it's different to PIN, it's not necessarily worth the different upsides, different downsides to each. And the thing is though, the downside that I kept hearing so often was the police can get in. Now, first of all, this seems to be predominantly a US concern. I've heard mostly from people in the US, and I think part of this is because it seems like in the US, apparently the police can compel you to provide a biometric authentication, so they can say you must put your thumb on the thing and unlock it, for example, but they can't compel you to provide a PIN. Now, I don't know if this is the same all over the world. I had some people say, look, this is not the case, for example, in Europe. I don't know. The thing is, whether it is or whether it isn't, I think people are really missing a huge part of the picture here. So, yeah, first of all, in terms of my question, is it really that bad? Probably 80% of people were like, yeah, it's really that bad. The police are continually like shooting people and then compelling them to unlock their phones. And I assume that this would be before they shot them. But there's just a huge amount of concern and fear. And very interestingly, actually, that's one of the things that came up in the Obama thing yesterday, where she said, look, there's governing by fear and there's governing by hope. And clearly the current administration is more in the former camp. And I wonder how much of that is driving this sentiment. But be that as it may, obviously there's been a whole bunch of nasty events where police have shot innocent people, and a lot of it is where people are more concerned if there is a certain racial demographic they'll be targeted, for example. And stuff which is really, really nasty. The thing is, as scared as everyone is, it seems to be something that is extremely rare. Like, you would hope it's extremely rare for the police to shoot people who haven't committed any crime, for example. Now, that doesn't make it okay when that happens. But if you're playing the odds game, and we're all playing the odds game with security, the chances of you getting shot and someone using your fingerprint to open your phone or compelling you to do so is just infinitesimally small. And there are definitely multiple different factors, both within and outside of your control, which will elevate the chances of that happening. But it is something that's just so rare, yet people are so scared about it, which I find really interesting. The other thing is that there's this argument of, the police can compel you if it's biometrics, but not if it's PIN. And I'm sort of saying to people, there are lots of ways the police can compel you to unlock a device with a PIN. One of those ways is brute force, literally beating someone until they unlock the device. And then people say, well, yes, that would be illegal, but then the whole thing is, they're saying that police want to unlock your device with your thumb so that they can delete evidence, which is also illegal. The point is that is one way in which anyone could compel anyone else to unlock the device. And I shared that old XKCD comic, the one where it's like, let's build all this super secure encryption, and then, we won't be able to break through it. And then the guy goes, well, we'll just hit him over the head with this hammer until he unlocks it. That's always a threat. There are many other ways that could be a threat as well. So one of the things that came up in my original Face ID post is people were saying, look, in domestic violence situations, biometrics is a problem. Now, I never got a clear answer on why that was the case, but I did get someone who does work in domestic violence situations, or I think their wife did, who said, look, one of the problems you've got in this sort of scenario is, let's say, an abusive husband could even be going to the point of saying, look, I'm going to harm a child unless you do something that I want you to do. So, for example, I'm going to harm the kid unless you unlock your iPhone. So, you know, there is another means of coercion. And then in terms of police and the law, they can certainly coerce you. You know, look, unlock the phone or this will happen. Unlock the phone if you want to get out of jail. There's a case at the moment where a guy's been in jail for 2 years because he won't unlock his phone. Now, that also appears to be a pedophilia case, so he's probably not going to garner much sympathy from anyone on that front. But you get the point. Just having a PIN doesn't suddenly make you super secure insofar as you can't be compelled to unlock the device. Now, then there's also the thing about a lot of people going, well, if you come into America, they might take your device and they might force you to unlock it and copy all your things off. So there's a couple of things there. Number one is that this did make me paranoid, right? Like, I succumbed to the paranoia to the extent where I took some additional precautions on the way I brought my devices into the country, but only to a small degree of inconvenience. Because this is what we're really talking about, right? Like, how inconvenient will you make your life in order to avoid this potential possibility of them forcing you to unlock your device? So, for example, should you just entirely wipe your device, then say restore from iCloud when you get to the other end? Should you take a burner phone? All of these things cause inconvenience, but of course they give you the upside of protecting your data. The interesting thing is, apparently, and I think this is a Homeland Security fact, it is only 0.01% of entrants into the US that are having their devices searched. So that's 1 in 10,000. So all else being equal, you've got a 1 in 10,000 chance of someone searching your device on entry. All things are not equal, because we then have things which will either elevate or decrease the likelihood of that happening. So, for example, ethnicity may be one of them. And yes, that totally sucks, but that is one of those things which could be an indicator of how more likely you are to have a device searched. Obviously, the country that you're coming from, your comings and goings from the country, your history on all sorts of other fronts may all be factors that drive whether or not Border Patrol is going to want to go through and look at your phone. So again, I think we've just got to keep context, because if we did say all things were equal, and inevitably you guys, some of you are going to be more at risk, some of you are going to be less at risk, but if it was all equal, that 1 in 10,000 odd is extremely low. I mean, if you're playing the odds game, I mean, they are not very positive odds at all. So I think, again, we just kind of start to lose track of reality in terms of what is actually the likelihood of one of these incidents taking place. Frankly, though, I would rather just go back to talking about the technology, because I saw people get very, very emotional about this topic. And certainly, if you were a victim of one of these incidents and you were forced to do something against your will, you would be very emotional. You'd be very pissed off. But this is people very, very emotional about seeing it happen in some really rare cases as well. So I just feel there's a bit of a lack of context there. All right, I'm just going to go back to talking about the tech stuff, and let's just stay out of the politics. So last thing, I've got Barclays sponsoring me again. So big thanks to those guys. They have sponsored me on multiple previous occasions now, which is really good. So their support has been awesome. Incidentally, I got asked by someone just before I started recording this who said, look, why don't you put sponsorship on Have I Been Pwned? You know, that probably gets as much traffic as my blog. Have I Been Pwned gets significantly more traffic than my blog, 3, 4, 5 times as much on sort of a normal day. On an abnormal day, it can be just ginormously more. I mean, I saw a day just after loading those 711 million records recently where I got nearly 3 million visitors in one day, which is a really, really healthy number. The reason I don't do sponsorship on Have I Been Pwned is I think it is really, really important to keep that site community-centric and keep any sort of commercialization aspects out of that. I think that just the fact that it's dealing in this sort of shady data breach scene, and it is a shady scene, I need to do everything possible to try and run the service ethically and responsibly. Now, this is also why you don't see anything on that site about any of the commercial options I offer. So I've said many times before, when organizations reach out, and particularly when they want access to data to help protect people who are, say, subscribers to their identity theft service, that's the sort of thing that organizations do pay for access for. But there's nothing about that on the site because I don't want the service to ever be looked at as something which is commercially driven, because I think that drives really, really bad behaviors. And I've got something else in draft which talks about those as well. So that's why I don't do it. And yes, there'd probably be a lot of money that people are willing to pay to put sponsor ads on there, but I just don't think it's the right thing to do. So look, that is that. I am now ready to wrap up in the US. I know this is out a bit later because of the time zones and things like that. I'll be back on the plane tonight, home on Sunday morning, and next week I'll come to you from Australia. And the really good thing is, for the next three-something months, I will come to you from Australia because I've got no more overseas trips until I go back to London for NDC in January. So everything else will be domestic, and there'll be a lot less jet lag and a lot more time with my family too, which is really cool. So thanks for watching. I hope that the sort of the insights into especially the Pearl Site event were interesting. If you've got any questions about that, please leave them on my blog and I'd be happy to answer them. Thanks for watching, guys.